We hear a lot from construction's great and good. CEOs and directors of the industry express their views at conferences, in publications, and in the pages of this very magazine. But what about the people who are just starting out? We rarely get to hear about their experiences or ideas. And yet, this is the demographic that will be using the buildings the industry creates, and that it desperately needs to attract if it is to fill the ever-widening skills gap. They are construction's future leaders. So, Building Magazine has invited its own advisory panel of recent graduates from across the industry to guest edit this issue, to explain what matters to them and what they think the industry needs to hear. Welcome to this Building Podcast special. I'm Jamie Harris, Building's digital editor. You can read our guest edited magazine in print and online this week. And you'll be able to listen ahead in this podcast to hear about two building reporters' visit to a build-to-rent scheme and from some of our graduates as they converse with senior colleagues as part of a reverse mentoring program. But first, Building's editorial team talks through the process behind giving the reins of the publication to our graduate advisory panel.
I'm Chloe McCulloch, editor of Building Magazine.
I'm Deborah Duke, I'm Group Production Manager of Building Magazine.
So this week has been a week with a bit of a difference. We decided to put a bit of a twist on our weekly edition by having it guest edited from our graduate panel. And it's been, well, I found it quite an exciting process. We tend to get a bit used to a routine, I guess, and do things the same way. And so inviting people in and asking for their ideas has been quite eye-opening, I found. But obviously, Deborah, you're in charge of the production on magazine and to some extent digital.
That's
so
right.
So how did you find it?
Well, we do to an extent rely and thrive on routine, but this was our deliberate attempt to really shake things up. And so we started off with very broad discussions with our graduate panel about what was important to them, because we needed from the very bottom up to have them shaping this issue and them to decide what they wanted to include. And then it was a question of getting their ideas and working out which parts of the magazine they could actually be in charge of and their ideas could feed into. So we worked out quite early on that most of the magazine could be devoted, certainly in terms of the features that we planned, they were very much driven by the graduate panel's ideas. And also the comment pieces. One of the things we wanted to get across was not only the topics they wanted to talk about, but also their own voices.
Yeah.
So we had some really great opinion pieces written not by our usual regular columnists, but giving the opportunity to these younger people in the industry who wouldn't normally necessarily have a space in an industry publication to give their views. For example, we had one comment piece from a graduate panel member who's in fact now on maternity leave, and she felt strongly that she wanted to talk about that experience and her experience as a young person of considering starting a family and how that would work with her career. And we thought that's brilliant, that's a standalone comment piece, and we can just have a page for her to talk about that the way we give a page to, for example, James Waits or Jack Pringle to talk about.
Yeah, like a CEO level person is normally the sort of level that we're getting comment pieces from, but these are professionals at the start, or maybe a couple of jobs in, but they won't have reached those levels where their opinions are being sought by publications. So I think this was a kind of a shortcut to get to those views. And I don't know, Jamie, you were in on the brainstorming session that we had with them back in February. We had this initial chat with them and got them over to our offices. And it was a really sort of lively discussion. But for me, what I really felt was their strong message to us was that they didn't want to just bang on about, complain about things. And as journalists, our job is to find problems and to kind of get people to complain. And I think maybe it was Sarah Beth, one of the graduates, sort of said, actually we'd like to explore issues but not moan.
Absolutely. It was sort of almost sort of overridingly sort of positive sort of attitude that they wanted to come across, just show that while we are amplifying their voices in a way that doesn't happen as often as it probably should. We wanted to amplify that these are ambitious but optimistic, and that, you know, they've got this idealistic view of the industry, how it could be. And I think that came across in one of the comment pieces as well, just saying, look, you know, obviously the industry is just ravaged by a myriad of problems and issues, but we could actually make this better for the whole industry. It wasn't just sort of looking out for, you know, looking out for themselves or looking out for their own company. It was looking out for the whole industry and how it came.
Yeah, and I think definitely their enthusiasm for working in the industry came across, that they enjoy their jobs, they enjoy their work, they find it fulfilling. And this actually was echoed in, so their central idea was, actually, this is how we feel, but how do others feel? They weren't presuming to know to speak for their entire generation. So they suggested to us to do a survey to find out perceptions, and that's what we've our big feature in the magazine this week is those survey results. And you analysed that data quite carefully, didn't you, Jamie?
Everyone was overwhelmingly positive. We had almost 500 responses of people who are under 30 working or studying construction. And we asked them, you know, do you enjoy your job? Do you enjoy your place of study or your qualification? And I think it was, yeah, all of it was in the 90s, that all of them said, yes, we enjoy what we do. We enjoy our job. We're ambitious. We want to sort of, you know, progress in the industry. We want to become a leader or get into a sort of a leadership position in 10 years, things like that.
Yeah, there's that enthusiasm of youth, which I think probably all organisations need. And I think maybe what came through from the whole issue is that maybe that enthusiasm can be a bit dismissed by older generations who value experience. And you can understand that in a very sort of output delivery-led industry. You know, you're judged by what you produce, and it's got to be technically up to the mark, and a lot of those roles do depend on experience. But at the same time, the industry's crying out for new ways of doing things and innovative thinking. Another realisation that I got through the process was these guys are busy. They've got really busy day jobs, and to get a bit of their time is hard. So I think that was the challenge, actually. They've got busy day jobs. One of the guys, Dermot, he's on site a lot, isn't he? So for him to break away to come to the brainstorming meeting was hard, you know. But I think, you know, I was really, really impressed with their enthusiasm and really grateful for the time that they did manage to give to it. So hopefully people will enjoy the read and find their views interesting.
I think it's very much not just the attitude, the optimism and the idealistic perhaps attitude. I think it's very much the ideas. And that's what came out of talking to these younger people in the industry. They're absolutely bursting with ideas. And they've got ideas of different ways of working, different ways of doing things that could actually be absolute gold dust to senior people in the industry. And that's also what came out in another one of our features that I find very interesting, which was a reverse mentoring feature, where we gave the opportunity for younger people within an organisation to talk to senior people. And really what came out of it was more than anything an opportunity for the senior people to have access to younger people in the industry who are absolutely bursting with insight into what their generation feels and thinks, but also just with ideas of how to do things differently and better. They're the disruptors that clever industry companies can be using.
Yeah.
And they're right there within their own organisations.
Yeah, and those ideas might not necessarily be aired in a boardroom, but if you've got, through reverse mentoring, if you've got one of your board members meeting up regularly with one of your new recruits, those ideas can go direct to the boardroom, can't they? There's no, you know, and you're short-circuiting all of that hierarchy that maybe is holding your organisation back. So I agree. I found that reverse mentoring, being a fly on a wall on the wall. Actually, Jamie, you sat in on some of those sessions, didn't you?
Yeah.
And actually, that's really fascinating to listen to those conversations.
What I found most interesting was that the board member, the senior person in the reverse mentoring interviews sort of one on one. They're all going, oh, that's a good idea, scribbling this down, and then
at
one point they said, I was just here as an aside. I was just getting in the way. You know, this interview, this is actually useful for them on a business level. But I mean, and the young people as well, you know, the new recruits that are having these ideas, a couple of them, I can't remember the specific examples, but a couple of them are saying, oh, this idea, I don't know why we're not doing this. I can't think of a reason why the industry wouldn't work in this way.
I think very much as we were saying with reverse mentoring is giving senior people the opportunity to find out what the next generation are thinking. Hopefully that in a larger sense, this week's edition of the magazine will do just that. We'll give everyone in the industry an insight into some of the ideas, opinions, views and thoughts of this next generation who will be the leaders of the future.
I think I'm very optimistic now having done this. That's what's great is that, you know, you can get dragged into being quite negative about construction news stories sometimes. That's our job as journalists. We go for the negatives often. Those make the good headlines. But actually, it was really nice to have positive headlines this week and to and to think that we can follow the progress of these individuals and also hope to tap into their ideas and keep listening and keep the conversation going.
Moving on. Jack Welch, the CEO of American company General Electric, is considered to be the pioneer of reverse mentoring programs. In 1999, he paired 500 of his managers with young employees who would be able to teach them how to use the web, an emerging technology at the time. But aside from digital skills, what wisdom can junior colleagues impart on their senior counterparts? Three members of our graduate panel paired up with colleagues from their business, and they took the opportunity to speak openly and honestly. It's a chance to share ideas and be heard. Let's hear some of what they had to say during those discussions.
I find it very difficult to speak to senior people that I don't know. I get very...
Do you?
Enclosed, yeah, in myself.
Okay, that's interesting.
I know you, so yeah. I find this conversation relatively easy. Yeah. But...
That's Emily Schoons of Ramble, one of our graduate panellists. She was speaking to Ramble's Regional Director for Buildings, Alex Lawrence. Their focus during their discussion was around how the process of reverse mentoring itself can provide a platform for fresh ideas.
For example, when I first spoke to RMD, I just panicked. Like, I went into blind panic and said absolutely stupid things. But that is a skill which I think is really important and helps break those boundaries of people being able to speak to senior management and say, I want to change in this way or I want to learn new skills here. And I think it's really nice to have it as a discussion because then it doesn't just sound like we're complaining or saying everything that's wrong. Because I think part of why we do this is because we do want to make a difference and we want to make a change. And that is about working together to achieve that. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing of knowing the experience and valuing the experience of more senior people, but having that open conversation which allows us to talk and move forward together.
Yeah.
But there are some people, I think, that still come in the industry because we have to decide so young what you want to do, and your decision, you're currently held at ransom to the decisions you make when you're, 16?
16, yeah.
And in a way, I think it's slightly absurd, and it sort of leads into a broader thing that I've always thought about, is that I don't think we should necessarily just be employing people that have engineering degrees, and that actually if people have the passion and the drive to learn more and have the ambition to try and make a difference in the built environment, then they should be given that opportunity, and just because they didn't choose an engineering degree shouldn't hold them back.
It's back to that society perception of the millennial generation. I think you said it in your notes, rather than complaining, it's around, well, actually, what about, how could we, what if we try this? Here's an idea.
Yeah.
And the industry needs to be receptive and should be receptive. It's a challenge. It is a challenging place. It's a challenging industry. Mm. So anything that makes life easier, better, more enjoyable can only be a good thing.
Having leaders around you and having good management around you and knowing that that support network is there helps drive your career forward. So I think something that Mace does really well and other companies do really well is giving their graduates responsibility. So you're put out there, and at the time it almost feels a bit like you're thrown in the deep end, but there is that safety net there behind you to say, well, it's fine, if you do it wrong, it is fine, but learn from it and don't do it again.
That's Mace's Victoria Keynes, another of Building's panellists. She sat down with the company's chief operating officer, Mark Holmes, where their focus was on retaining new graduates and giving them the support they're looking for to succeed.
That culture of being supported without being spoon-fed is a really difficult balance. And I think you can get some companies that say, like if you take job titles, for example, a lot of companies say, okay, you are a graduate cost consultant, you are a graduate engineer, you are a graduate whatever your role. Whereas I think Mace take quite a good line in that you are an assistant. So you're not automatically labelled, automatically badged as just coming out of university. You are just still badged as I'm learning. Give me some leeway in what I say, what I do, and don't just dump me in the deep end and expect me to be able to swim forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. One of the subtle changes we made several years ago was people didn't like the idea of trainee.
Mm.
Particularly after you've just spent 3 years getting two ones and first, to then come here and suddenly be called a trainee didn't feel right. So, and one of the things that still bugs us is this thing about attrition, about why people leave. And the honest answer is, and it's kind of plays to what we were talking about earlier, if we can get people to get through the first 2 years, they stay a long time. And we still have not great stats in terms of the amount of people that leave within the first 12 months or the first 2 years.
I think working in the construction industry, you can pad your CV out with a breadth of projects rather than companies.
Mm.
So perhaps in other industries, you can say, oh, I worked at this company and had this experience, and then worked for here where I got this experience. Well, you can actually get the breadth of experience by working on different projects rather than changing jobs.
Confident enough to be able to not feel they have to be responsible.
That's WIG's Group HR Director Rich Roberts, who sat down with another of Building's panellists, Annabelle Lalloy. Among other areas, this pair focused on training, development, and giving staff a bedrock of confidence when they first join the industry.
It can be hugely powerful. I think it helps the staff members to feel more valued, and I would say it depends on kind of the recruitment process and the relationship you have on a personal level as well with more senior staff members. But often with coming into a job as a graduate first role or something, there's a real nervousness and a real kind of scared, am I doing it right, or do they secretly think I'm terrible at my job? There's a lot of even if you were very confident in your kind of area of expertise of what you studied at university, coming into a working environment is so different that even the most confident of person will feel stressed and anxious about the work they're producing. And I think actually the kind of, even like you said, even if it's a small thing, it's like saying, oh, Annabelle helped me out with this particular like bit of research, and here is what I think, and this, and it can be a real confidence boost.
What would really successful personal development look like from your perspective, and from the kind of the view of your generation, your peers?
So I think it's about a combination, really, and options, because everyone learns in different ways and takes in information in different manners. And so I think people like variety and not feeling pressured into doing certain things like... but what I would say, sometimes, often with graduates and people entering the business, you've had education your whole life. You're getting into something new, and I would say going to R-style sessions or things like that, sometimes they can be comforting, because you're going back to your comfort zone, you're going back to something you know. Topics that can be useful. However, I would say a lot of the time people are bored of education, like by that time. You've spent potentially 21 years, learning in that style, and you can be a bit put off by that. You're like, oh, it's just going to be another lecture, it's not going to be that relevant, and things like that. And so I'd say more practical sessions, and things where there's other like-minded folk around to kind of have a discussion and making it kind of a social activity as well, kind of having a combination sometimes, I think, with graduate development days or things like that. From a personal perspective, coming to work after being at university is incredibly lonely, really. There's so many people think loneliness is only for, well, not only for, but it's majorly for, like, elderly people, for example. They're the ones who are lonely because they maybe don't have as many family connections near them anymore. Well, actually, when you come out of university, you find a job, you're looking everywhere for a job. You might have ideas of places you'd like to live, but typically, you go where the work is. You move to where your work is, and that's the main reason you've moved to that location. And actually, a lot of the time, you don't have any friends there. You don't have any connections. You don't have anyone you feel necessarily that comfortable with. In terms of mental health, that can be incredibly draining if you don't feel like you've got then maybe the connections at work as well.
This week we decided that the project's piece, we wanted it to be relevant to the demographic that we're talking about, so the younger generation. It's well known that younger people are kind of locked out of home ownership, and at the same time we've got this rise of build to rent. So the idea was, well, let's try and get the graduate panel to go and visit a build to rent scheme and review it. And Quintain was actually really, they're doing the Wembley development, and it's really interesting. I mean, you can see what's attractive about it. And so we sent two reporters, Hamish and Will, who we'll hear from. What was brilliant was that Quintain then suggested, rather than just popping in and visiting it, why don't you have a stay over? Like, we can put up a flat and you can really experience it. So Hamish and Will had a sleepover in a three-bedroom flat over in Wembley, and the recordings that you'll hear are the result of that, really.
Hiya, my name is Will Ng. I'm a reporter, I don't think.
And I'm Hamish Champ, and I am a reporter on Building and Housing Today.
Okay, so you're off to spend some time a build-to-rent scheme today in Wembley. Should we start with sort of what your sort of experiences, what your knowledge is of build-to-rent at the moment?
None whatsoever. No, I mean I've rented and owned, so I've never been in a build-to-rent. I'm interested to see if it's a kind of all-in-one package kind of thing. And judging by the blurb that's been produced for this particular development, there seems to be many bells and whistles attached.
Yeah, it's an interesting new offer, putting lots of other things, as Hamish says, into the package, like free tickets to gigs. They've got quiz nights. They've got supper clubs with renowned chefs. Wow. So it's interesting throwing that into a package of...
Yeah, is that something that perhaps would entice you? So say you were looking for somewhere to move to, is that something that would entice you?
If I'm honest, I haven't gone around looking to rent out a house in London and thinking, if I can get a supper club with my house, with my new house to rent, I'll be delighted. But, you know, I'm sure they're right that there is a market for it.
I think that's what's going to be the interesting thing, is finding out what kind of people they're looking to attract.
It seems like it's catered towards families very much, though. It says there is a special neighbourhood team that controls, patrols and cares for the place. I'm not sure I want to live somewhere that's been controlled and by somebody else. Quite unnerving.
I don't think, looking at the bump, they do look amazing, and the facilities are amazing, and if that's the kind of thing that you want, then you'll be in clover. I'd be very interested again to hear from them whether families are one of their target markets. They might say they are, just to sort of sound well rounded, and but they don't strike me as family. But then again, obviously it's a three-bedroom flat, so you're possibly going to have that. And the fact that they're pet-friendly, or some of them are, might make more feasible.
Interestingly, Hamish, only well-behaved pets.
Yes, that is very true.
Well-behaved pets?
Do they actually say that?
They do say that.
Yeah, well-behaved pets. Yeah. Which I think there's a serious point to all of that, which is they want people that want a straight, honest, lifestyle. They don't want music
blaring out at 3 in the morning. I think it would be interesting to see what the build quality is like. I mean, you know, they're likely to be concrete floors because they normally are in these new developments, which obviously means that the sound is less of an issue.
I know, I actually think it's quite bold of them to want to rent it out, because they're going to have to build it really quite well, and they're going to have to maintain it, and they're going to have to continue renting it out, presumably at, you know, broadly similar prices for quite a long time, so they're going to have to maintain it quite well. There are probably certain house builders that build certain houses that you wouldn't want to be looking after for 10, 20 years. So I think that's interesting.
First impressions, Will.
We came out of Wembley Park Station and we walked towards Wembley Stadium. And TP was quite present there. It has banners all along advertising its rental properties. And as well as that, you can sort of see the big residential developments sort of looming over to you.
And there are a lot of them.
So that's quite striking, I guess. I've never really seen renting advertised before.
Yeah, Rental Rebellion was kind of like a Soviet-esque sort of artwork, wasn't it? It was the guy holding the... Was it a key? He was holding what looked like
It was a key,
Instead of a sort of a mallet, like in the Soviet art, it was kind of a key or something. Yeah.
I think more offensive was that it was just quite cliché. But the PR did admit divided opinion. But that was interesting. Okay, so then we got in there. I mean, it's quite odd at the moment. There are still bits of building sites interspersed by very manicured pieces of grass and then these, like, quite tidy, clean, big sort of residential towers.
Yeah.
We went into the TP Hub, which is the place from... the place from which they manage all of the places. That was quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously got quite a sizable letting agency operation. I don't think they like thinking of themselves as a mere letting agent, but, you know, that's what they do. But they do it with a bit of panache, I suppose. I mean, it's quite a stylish space, presumably decked out with the kind of John Lewis furniture that we see around us at the moment. You have to excuse us, we're eating toast and drinking tea while we're doing this, but hey.
Courtesy of TP, provide you with tea and toast when you arrive.
Right. So. And a bottle of sparkly.
Yeah, so it's quite nice. To be fair to them, full marks there.
We went down, we were shown around the social areas, weren't we? What did you think of those?
Okay, so there was quite a nice, actually, velvet sofa, a television.
Sort of lounge thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a lounge thing, then a kind of high seating kind of coffee bar type place where you could sit with your laptop and do some work. At the moment, this has been built for a small while and there are people living here, but it's not fully booked up. I wonder if at any point it would feel a bit more like it belonged to the people. Mm. Just a bit less manicured, I guess. Yeah, a bit less, like, designed by the fit-out people at John Lewis.
Yeah.
Despite them having done quite a good job.
Yeah. I mean, the things that Annabelle from TP was... You know, she was telling us all about the kind of things that you get thrown in for your £2,500 that it costs to rent this place a month. And you get all of your utilities bar the council tax because they're legally not allowed to pay that for you. You know, you can call up somebody to fix something, they'll be there almost immediately, or certainly, you know, not much more than half an hour. So that kind of call out thing is being sold as a plus. They did say that in some of the larger flats in some of the other blocks they have families and they can move around without being charged. They can move from flat to flat. So, you know, if you're looking for a modern, ready to move into flat that you've got £2,500 to chuck at every month and you don't mind living in Wembley, albeit that it's only 12 minutes from Baker Street by the Metropolitan line, then this could be deemed to be ideal.
Yeah. I think what's very interesting is they are trying to sell you a lifestyle. And actually, I think they're quite open about that.
Yeah.
Part of this is putting your name into a draw to win tickets at Wembley Stadium or Wembley Arena.
Mm.
Now, look, personally, I wouldn't know what to do with Ed Sheeran tickets. But I can see for a lot of people, that's quite exciting. Mm. And interestingly, you can move to any other part of... I mean, I guess it makes sense. You can move to any other part of the estate. You can move pretty quickly.
You can scale up.
There are no fees to move to a different part. In fact, they'll help you move, they say. Mm. I guess that makes sense, but...
The flexibility is that you can apparently have between 3 months and 3 years as a lease, which is, for some people, absolutely ideal. Mm. But is it cheaper than housing? I don't know. I suppose it means you don't have to buy, you don't have to put a deposit down for these places. You don't have to pay any fees to move in here, subject to credit checks, so we've been told. But it's still... That's still a lot of cash, even though you're getting all this stuff bundled in, the utilities and all that kind of stuff. And as you say, there are a few add-ons. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it fares. And so,
yeah, and more than that, I think people will buy into the community aspect of it, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to live somewhere that has supper clubs with world-renowned chefs, they say, but where you're going to be expected to sort of know the people that live around you, at least a lot of people...
Yeah.
That live how I would have thought, want to know who live around them. And it is a kind of community and it's a neighbourhood feel, which I think is probably quite unique in London. It probably appeals to lots of people.
Yeah.
That's all we've got time for on this special edition of Building Podcasts. You can read all of the features mentioned in this episode at building.co.uk/next-gen-takeover, where you'll find more from our guest-edited edition of Building. We're also back with a new series of Building podcasts next Friday. Don't miss an episode by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find previous episodes there too, as well as at building.co.uk/podcasts. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.